BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Giving birth is never easy. Giving birth during a global pandemic is another story.
I'm not aware of any period in our existence when the challenges faced by new parents and pregnant mums in terms of their mental well-being has been so challenged. This cutback in their social support and their professional support has been completely unprecedented.
Lockdown has been difficult for most of us. But 6 months almost to the day since we were all instructed to stay at home, many of the restrictions put in place at the height of the pandemic on services for pregnant women and new mums are still in place.
We're hearing that women have had enough. As we've seen people being allowed to go to the pub, people have lost patience with that and people are saying, why aren't we being allowed to be together?
While other basic health services have been reduced or entirely withdrawn.
The health visiting team were our only lifeline. They were the only people that we could have seen for that support. And it wasn't there.
As we move into the next phase of the crisis, some professionals are worried that the restrictions themselves could have resulted in the most serious harm possible.
My concern is that we will have deaths of children. I think that's every health visitor and social worker's concern. Yeah, that there will be deaths of children because of the way that this was managed.
I had a feeling it might be a girl, but my husband was convinced it was a boy. So it was a nice surprise when she was born to find out.
This is Laurel. She lives in East London and just last month, a full 6 weeks before she was due to have her baby, she woke unexpectedly.
It was like 5 to 6 a.m. I have a pain. It's coming regularly. It's quite strong. And there was nothing I could do that would help to ease it. It was so intense. That's when I realised it was like the real deal. Like, oh, wow, something's happening here. And it feels like labour. And that's when we called the ambulance because I knew I wasn't going to make it in the car.
She was brought to her local hospital, the Royal London in Whitechapel, with her husband Patrick. But things were moving fast.
I just had this feeling, especially once I was inside the ambulance, that the baby was getting ready to come out. I was struggling to breathe through the contractions. I was just like literally huffing and puffing. I was like gripping onto the side of the trolley. My husband was just like standing there looking really worried.
Like many elements of this story, the COVID restrictions you come up against will depend on where you live. In the early days of the pandemic, strict rules meant that some women had to endure labour on their own while their birth partners waited outside. But even after guidance stated partners should be there for labour and birth, different trusts applied the rules in different ways. At Laurel's Hospital, partners are only permitted once things really get going, once established labour begins. It seems when Laurel arrived, it was assumed she hadn't reached that stage and her husband Patrick was sent away.
The midwife said that he has to go. She said, you need to go, you have to get out. And he was just like confused because obviously we came in together in the ambulance and he still didn't know what was going on. He said, oh, but you know, my wife's in pain. I think she's in labour. I'm really worried for her. And she's like, no, you need to go. You have to get out now.
Patrick tried to wait in the hall, but was spotted by security and escorted out. They left the house in such a hurry that they'd forgotten the hospital bag. So, in the dark about what was going on inside, he started to walk home to get it. But maybe 20, 30 minutes later, he got a text to say, baby is coming.
He ran all the way back to the hospital to come and see his daughter being born. You know, he didn't realise he was going to miss it.
When did you realise he wasn't going to make it?
Pretty much once I was pushing. When that first push came, I looked around and I realised that he wasn't here. And it was just, you know, just really sunk in that I was completely alone. I felt so desperate.
Laurel is adamant her husband should not have been sent away. She says it should have been obvious to midwives that she was not in early labour. But either way, She thinks any rule that keeps partners out at any stage makes no sense. As she put it to me on the phone, they live together. They share the same germs. Plus, how come he can go to the pub, but he can't be there for the birth of his daughter?
Even in the early stages of labour, you're still in proper labour. It can still feel quite scary and quite worrying. It doesn't matter if you're giving birth for the first time or the 10th time. You just really need that someone that you know, that you trust to guide you through it.
She's not the only one. A petition calling for the relaxation of these restrictions has racked up over 400,000 signatures online. They want an end to the COVID rules that have forced many women to go to scans or endure parts of labour on their own, while others have faced miscarriage alone as their partners waited in the car park.
I think we're hearing that women have had enough.
Maria Booker is from Birth Rights UK, a charity that advocates for the rights of women during pregnancy and birth.
At the height of the pandemic, I think there was a lot of patience with those restrictions. I think there was a lot of understanding that although they were very tough on pregnant women and their families, that there was a national lockdown going on and this was the part that they had to play. But as we've seen people being allowed to go to the pub, being allowed to go to the shops, being allowed to go to a wedding, I think people have lost patience with that and people are saying, why at such an important time in my life and such an important time in my partner's life, you know, they're a parent too. Why aren't we being allowed to be together?
Maria says England lags behind Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, where services have been directed to allow partners where possible.
Organisations under human rights law have an obligation to ensure that if they are restricting the rights of a woman to choose the circumstances of her birth, that the restriction on those rights is proportionate. Of course, it's important to keep staff safe, and of course, safety needs to be considered. But there's also a psychological safety, and that needs to be taken into account when these decisions are made too. And what we're seeing at the moment is, you know, some trusts not really considering that aspect of the harm it could be doing, as well as a very valid need to look at the need to control the spread of the virus.
NHS England declined our invite for an interview, but told us they were clear throughout that exceptions on visiting restrictions should be made when a woman is in labour, adding they issued new guidance so partners can attend scans or other appointments safely. When challenged in the Commons last week, Boris Johnson agreed to look at the rules again, but Maria Booker is worried that leaving the decision in the hands of individual trusts will mean that this mismatch of approaches in different areas will continue.
We already know that around a third of women giving birth have some kind of trauma following that experience. And I think this is just going to make it worse. And it's not only for the woman herself, but also for the partner. And I think they also feel traumatised by not being able to help, not being able to support their partner in the way they want to, and not being a part of their baby's journey into life.
In East London, COVID restrictions meant Laurel's husband missed the birth of their daughter. But that wasn't the last roadblock they came up against.
When they finally brought me around to the labour room, I'd already given birth. The baby was out. He quickly saw us and got a cuddle. And the midwife said, you need to get some clothes and some nappies for the baby. So he left again and he said, oh, will I meet you guys back in the room? She said yes, but I'd actually been wheeled back over to the postnatal by that point. So, that was the only time that he got to see both of us.
Laurel and the baby had been taken to the postnatal unit for treatment, where partners were not allowed at all. It was another 3 days before Patrick was allowed to see his wife and baby again. Three weeks on, Laurel is trying to focus on her little girl, but is finding the circumstances of her birth difficult to shake.
Having a traumatic experience, it stays with you and your family for the long term. I think the main thing is just disappointment, just with him missing out on such an important moment, and also guilt for me having to go through that alone.
And how are you coping?
I just get like flashbacks, nightmares, struggle to sleep sometimes, and it's still affecting my bond with the baby as well. just like learning, you know, just getting to know her and falling in love has been like quite delayed and slow process. I don't think I'll ever be over it, but I hope that I will heal from it enough to feel like I can move on from this experience at least. So that's still a work in process at the moment.
Barts Health NHS Trust told us they welcome and encourage partners throughout labour and birth and immediately after. They say due to the pandemic, they've taken extraordinary protective measures to minimise the risk of harm, including limiting visitors. They say they understand restrictions can be difficult and they work closely with families to ease their concerns. For new mums, once the baby arrives safely, the level of professional support available is still patchy and uncertain.
It's 10 to 8 and I'm getting ready for my day.
Lucy is a health visitor in South London.
Today I've got 5 6-week checks to do over the phone to check on mums and babies to make sure they're both well, talk about immunisation.
All new mums get a health visitor. They're like a frontline defence against child health problems, a lifeline for new mums and babies, but they're also trained to spot early signs of illness, harm or neglect.
Significant domestic violence at home. And then I'm visiting two babies who've been born for what we call the new birth visit. So it's quite a busy day. Most people don't really know what health visitors do. Our role is quite misunderstood. I think lots of people think we weigh babies and that's about it, really. We certainly have the ability to change and save lives every day, every week. It might be difficult to quantify that, but we absolutely do.
The week before lockdown, the Director of Community Health at NHS England and NHS Improvement wrote to community health officials, giving the green light to redeploy health visitors to shore up the frontline response to COVID-19. Staff in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland were also redeployed. But in England, it's thought that in some parts of the country, up to 70% were sent to work elsewhere, often at very short notice, leaving countless families without the support they needed and the remaining staff left to pick up the slack. Just so you know, Lucy isn't her real name and an actor is saying her words.
We received an email on the Friday that health visitors would be redeployed from the following week. They didn't have a clue what they were going to have to do. There was no guidance for them. Those of us left behind were incredibly concerned for our colleagues who weren't even able to provide handovers about the children they were responsible for. It was very, very frightening.
What did it mean for those of you who were left behind?
To start, I was working long days, carrying on into the weekends, phoning vulnerable clients, trying to get to grips with the child protection families, the safeguarding concerns. I had families move into the borough who were escaping domestic violence, who felt, in their words, dumped because there were just no services around to support them at the time. It was a very, very scary, difficult time. We were also having babies born who we needed to make contact with because, well, you know, babies didn't stop being born.
Ava was one of those babies. Her mum, Jessica, here showing off her peekaboo skills, waited a long time for her to make an appearance.
Ava was actually conceived through IVF, so we'd been trying for quite a long time, so she couldn't have been more wanted. We were incredibly lucky. We fell pregnant on our first attempt, and I know that doesn't happen for many people, so we were just absolutely over the moon.
And despite being born into a global pandemic, things got off to a good start.
We got home, and obviously we were in the middle of lockdown, and in all honesty, that in a sense was a bit of a blessing. It was our first child and we really wanted that time to be able to bond with her, just the two of us as a couple. And that's exactly what we got.
As Jessica and her partner got to grips with early parenthood, they noticed that something wasn't right.
Quite early on, I remember after probably the first 2 weeks, we started noticing that Ava was just incredibly uncomfortable and she would squirm a lot and cry out in pain. We spoke to the health visitor over the phone, so none of them were doing home visits at this point. We believed the health visitor when she said that it was just colic and that it would pass and that it would become easier. But she wasn't getting any better. In fact, she was getting worse.
And did you explain all this to your health visitor?
Yeah, I was explaining it as best as I knew how.
Like in many parts of the country, Jessica said she was told that health visitors were no longer doing face-to-face visits and her local walk-in clinic was suspended indefinitely. But as the weeks went on, Jessica found it increasingly difficult to reach her health visitor even on the phone, with calls going unanswered or unreturned.
We were told that we could ring at any time and that our health visitor would be on the end of the line. There is a main line for the health visitors that you can ring, so that we got a lot better response through the main line. But we were getting the same answers all the time. It was, it's colic. But there was just something in the back of my mind just kept saying, this isn't normal. This isn't just colic. There's something else wrong with her.
For weeks, Ava got progressively worse and her parents increasingly worried. Jessica showed me a video she took of Ava during this time. Her little face is all red and scrunched up and her back is arched. Her mum is struggling to console her. Jessica says it wasn't until she took Ava to be seen privately that they finally got an answer.
Within 5 minutes of being in her office, she diagnosed everything. Took one look in her mouth and said she's quite severely tongue-tied. She's got one of the worst cases of reflux that I've seen. I broke down and cried because finally somebody could give me an answer as to what was wrong with my daughter, but also insanely angry that I had to wait until she was 11 weeks old and that I had to pay to go privately.
Both of these conditions are pretty common and relatively minor, but left undiagnosed for so long meant that Ava hadn't been feeding properly for quite a long time. What her parents didn't know was that she also wasn't gaining weight. At home, they tried anything they could think of to feed their baby.
I was having to hand express into a bottle and then feed her with a pipette because she was in pain, because she was getting herself so worked up that she wouldn't feed from a normal bottle.
Ava was almost 3 months old by the time she finally had the procedure to address the tongue tie.
And it was at that point that we realised that she had dropped in weight, that this was now an emergency and that something had to be done very quickly.
What were you thinking?
It was just absolute devastation. I guess as a mother, you feel once that baby is handed to you in the hospital, that is now your sole purpose in life, to keep them safe and well. And I felt like I had failed her. And it was crushing.
What difference do you think it would have made had you had better access to your health visitor?
I believe it's entirely their responsibility to check for these things when they're doing those visits. I fully appreciate that we were in a pandemic and that they had to keep themselves safe as well as keeping the mothers and babies safe by not doing home visits. But when you've got a new mother that is constantly telling you the same symptoms, that is constantly saying that there is something else wrong and that the symptoms are getting worse, I will never understand why that wasn't raising a flag.
Jessica's family live in Wales and her partner's family live in the southeast of England. Their usual support network was, in her words, decimated, which was why access to a health visitor was more important than ever.
The health visiting team were our only lifeline. They were the only people that we could have seen for that support. And it wasn't there, for me anyway. And that was incredibly frustrating and upsetting.
The trust responsible for the health visiting service where they live in Cheltenham told us they were very sorry to hear Jessica's concerns. And while they couldn't comment on individual cases, they take all concerns very seriously and investigate them fully. They said the service remained open during lockdown and that families were assessed and offered face-to-face, online or telephone appointments. They added they're also developing COVID-secure clinics for those who would like to meet face-to-face.
Okay, I think I've started the recording on my side.
Dr. Gabriella Conti is an associate professor at University College London.
I'm in a remote village in the mountains, so there should be no traffic. But
she's been studying health visitors for years. We spoke to her from what she called a COVID-free village in rural Italy, from where she was keen to point out that in England, at least, The crisis in health visiting predates the pandemic.
There have been, unfortunately, repeated cuts. And that coincided with the devolution of the health visiting services to the local authorities, which now were in charge of commissioning these services since October 2015.
This shift in responsibility from central government to local authority coincided with a drop in the number of NHS health visitors by more than a third in the last 5 years.
And of course, when you have the numbers of health visitors dropping and, you know, kids continuing, thank God, to being born, what's going to happen is the caseload increases. And the caseload has increased quite dramatically.
Fewer health visitors and a higher caseload meant staff were already stretched to their limit. Factor in the pandemic, and things become much more difficult. Gabriella surveyed over 600 health visitors in June and July of this year and found the vast majority were worried about the potential for the most serious harm during redeployment.
They were worried not to be able to reach the most vulnerable parents and children, and in particular their main concern, which was reported by 96% of them, was domestic violence and abuse, followed by child safeguarding, followed by child neglect.
That's huge.
Yes, most worryingly is that over a third of them, 37%, told us that if they could leave health visiting, they would. And this is honestly something that you really don't want to hear from such an important profession for the well-being of parents and children.
It's 12 o'clock and I've finished my 6 week checks.
In South London, health visitor Lucy is almost halfway through her appointments for the day.
They're quite lengthy because mums haven't seen any health professionals at all, so we had lots to talk about. A couple of the mums were quite tearful, feeling quite isolated. I'm now going to meet a mum who's experiencing domestic violence to support her getting legal and mental health support. Then I have two new babies to see this afternoon.
Looking back, she thinks the decision to redeploy was badly thought out and dangerous.
There was no need for it. The staff who were redeployed weren't actually doing any work initially. Then some of them were put into admin roles when they could have been helping us contact those vulnerable children. The whole time there was what we might call this sort of child protection pandemic that was going on, where children weren't being seen by professionals and were able to hide themselves away. And that was very concerning to us.
So what kind of caseload did you have after the redeployment?
I think probably around 4,000 to 5,000. The recommended limit is 250 per health visitor. And within those, obviously, you've got child protection families and safeguarding concerns. So, yeah, it was. It was very frightening.
So you had 20 times the recommended limit?
Yeah. I hate saying this, but I wouldn't even have known who they were. I couldn't have known who they were with those numbers. There were concerns raised about the size of our caseloads before COVID because they were already very, very high. This has just made it far worse.
What are you most worried about, do you think?
My concern is that we will have deaths of children. I think that's every health visitor and social worker's concern. Yeah, that there will be deaths of children because of the way that this was managed.
Over the past few weeks, we've spoken to scores of health visitors who paint a similar picture.
We know abuse is going on, but women find it difficult to speak. We can sometimes see other people in the room, in the background, on the video calls, and it's hard to ask direct questions about domestic violence. We have to try and be clever with what we ask and how we ask it so that women can give yes or no answers.
We were working so hard. Before redeployment, we were struggling, and then I was allocated more safeguarding families to my caseload. It was horrendous. I was having to work from 4 a.m. to midnight to try and keep up.
I did a new birth visit and everything seemed fine. A couple of weeks after, she phoned me and was quite distressed. She told me her husband had hit her. I think if I'd visited her at home, I would have picked up on that. I would have seen the baby, but I also would have seen the father and maybe had more leeway to talk to him and tell him it's better to get help for stress or mental health early rather than when it's too late.
You really don't notice a health visiting service when times are normal because they're there in the background and they're supporting every family. But when you take the service away, then you really see what a difference it's been making.
Dr. Cheryl Adams is the director of the Institute of Health Visiting, a membership organisation open to anyone in the sector.
We've seen quite an explosion, unfortunately, of mothers with postnatal depression. We know that domestic violence rates have gone up. I mean, it's been a really, really difficult time for families without support, and health visiting is part of that support.
She says the redeployment should never have happened. And like Lucy, is concerned about the impact the decision will have had on families and children.
I don't think we know yet, probably, the scale of the challenges that families have faced without the service. I'm worried about the families, and I'm worried about the children who, if you like, were babies, young babies during this period when perhaps their mums were very, very stressed. They didn't have the support they needed.
But at its most serious, are you worried that the decision to redeploy will have resulted in the death of babies?
Yes, I'm very worried about that, and health visitors are very worried about that. We know that, unfortunately, the first year of life tends to have the highest homicide figures for babies in the home. If families aren't receiving support, are very anxious, stressed, maybe moving into poverty because they've lost jobs, that just has to make babies more vulnerable. And it might not just be homicide, it could also be health issues that are addressed too late, that perhaps might have been corrected if they'd been found earlier. Yes, it's very, very worrying. And that is what keeps health visitors awake at night.
We asked NHS England about their part in the decision to redeploy, but they didn't respond to those points. Public Health England told us they worked with NHS England to develop guidance on prioritising need at the start of the pandemic, updating it as more was understood. They say they worked on guidance to restore services and make sure that the most vulnerable children receive effective support. The Local Government Association, who represent local authorities, told us they flagged the risks of losing this vital workforce at the time and later worked with Public Health England and NHS England to restore services as soon as possible. The explosion in the numbers of mothers developing postnatal depression, mentioned by Dr. Cheryl Adams, has been felt in every corner of the country.
I'm just about to leave the house.
This is Stacey. She's on her way to collect a cot from a local charity.
This place does everything you really need for the first 12 months of your baby's life, from car seats, clothes, baths, cots, pushchairs.
I'm just pulling into the car park.
She's a single mum, currently out of work, and she's struggling.
Really, at the moment, we're kind of living week by week, taking help where we can get it. So finding this place was a godsend. A baby was refusing to sleep in a crib, so I'm hoping that this will help so I can actually get some sleep.
Rewind 12 months, and Stacey was in a very different situation. She was working full-time, living with her partner, planning a family together.
I've always wanted to be a mum. Right from the start, he was the one that said that he wanted to start a family with me. I never really met anyone that actually wanted to have children before him. So it was definitely the right time. Probably within a week or two of finding out I was pregnant, the relationship broke down. I kept in contact with him, invited him to scans. He didn't turn up.
Stacey spent years serving in the military before moving to China to teach English. Now living and working in Newcastle, having a baby on her own was the last thing she expected.
It was very isolating. I was booked on to loads of courses when I first found out I was pregnant, but they were all cancelled. Everything. First time mum as well, I had no idea what to expect.
As news of lockdown broke, a familiar feeling began to descend upon her.
Just feeling panicked all the time. Sweats and stress, headaches, constant tension headaches. It probably hit really quickly at the start of lockdown, to be honest, and then it just got gradually worse the closer I came to giving birth. Even just the thought of getting out of bed in the morning alone, even before the day had even started. The only reason I did get out of bed was because I have a dog. If it wasn't for him, I would have stayed there, I think.
Anxiety isn't new to Stacey. Not long after she left the military, she developed anxiety so severe that every time she left the house, she felt physically sick. It got so bad, she used to carry a plastic bag around with her in case she needed to throw up. She got help at the time, but she says this was different.
I think I would have struggled anyway with lockdown, but being pregnant made it so much more intense. I don't think I left the house for about 12 weeks.
You didn't leave the house for 3 months?
Not at all. Yeah, I couldn't even go into the garden. I had to get random strangers that I don't even know in the community to bring me things like milk and bread because I just couldn't leave the house.
Stacey's story of ever-increasing anxiety during her pregnancy, of finding it difficult to even step out of the door, not just because of lockdown, but because of the crippling anxiety she is suffering, is very typical.
Dr. Alan Gregoire is a mother and baby psychiatrist and chair of the Maternal Mental Health Alliance.
This lockdown has had a dramatic effect on that, and most mums are reporting that their mental health is worse or is affected.
So what kind of numbers are we talking about?
Oh my goodness. Well, there are 800,000 births a year in the UK. You know, that means 400,000 have happened during this crisis. The evidence we have is that something like a third of mums normally experience mental health problems to some degree. And the reports we've had is the vast majority are saying that the lockdown situation has made those difficulties worse. So maybe as many as two-thirds of mums are reporting some degree of mental health problems. So huge, absolutely huge numbers, hundreds of thousands.
Alan is worried that such a huge spike in demand will mean services won't be able to keep up.
We certainly have seen case examples of women with young babies suffering so much in isolation without the professional help they needed that they've ultimately just given up and decided that death was better than carrying on living. That's at the very extreme. Fortunately, that's not many people, but it is happening.
Do you worry about women who give birth during the crisis?
Yeah, of course I do, because that's my job. But we should all worry about those mums and those families. This is something that we must take seriously. Women and families in this situation can be helped now and can be helped to overcome the longer term challenges that this is exposing them to. And it is critically important we do that because this is critical to the future of our next generation, of our society, and indeed, if you're only interested in money, of our economy.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
How are you?
Same time.
Stacey says she was lucky. Her midwife realised she was struggling and referred her to a local charity called Children North East, who support families from Northumberland down to Teesside. But she isn't out of the woods yet. Her therapist is concerned she may have developed postnatal depression. But Stacey says their regular sessions over video call have been a lifesaver.
I don't think I could have done it otherwise. And I mean that genuinely. I really would have struggled. Baby classes hadn't started again at that time. Stuck in the house with a baby, had no help. No one could just pop round, you know, check on me, make sure that I'm doing okay, make sure baby's doing okay. Honestly, I just don't think, I can't even imagine how I would have got this far without them. That's for sure.
Alan Gregoire warns that even in the grip of a pandemic, we cannot afford to lose sight of the importance of community and mental health services.
If we look at the front line of one of the most exceptional aspects of our health service, our health visitors, they have been decimated in recent years in terms of their numbers, in terms of investment. So public health has been cut, community services have been cut, and we have always prioritised the more exciting blood on the floor, green mask, dramatic, tall glass, shiny hospitals side of our health service and neglected the community, the mental health, the public health side. And that has got to change because prevention and delivery of care outside of hospitals is going to, in the future, as it should have done in the past, have a much greater impact on the health of the nation than shiny buildings and machines that go beep.
Hello.
It's 5 p.m. I've almost finished my day. I'm pretty exhausted.
In South London, health visitor Lucy is back at work now, and at least some of her visits are in person, but by no means all.
I've been out in my car visiting babies, which was really nice because we haven't been able to do that recently. It just means I'm able to watch interactions and have better discussions with mums. It makes it so much easier to do the job.
In June, NHS England updated their advice, instructing providers to fully restore health visiting services across the country. But despite this, almost 4 months later, we've been told that many health visitors are still carrying out much of their work over the phone or on video call, and that some have yet to return to their role at all. Faced with a long winter and increased COVID restrictions, this is something that concerns Lucy a lot. Is it possible to spot illness, harm or neglect over the phone?
Obviously not always, no. You can hear what people are saying and the tone of their voice, but no, absolutely. People send me photos of their babies and we have lovely conversations about their babies and I say how sad I am that I can't see them. But some people will only send photos of what they want you to see. So no, we will be missing neglect, definitely. We can no longer have drop-in clinics where people just turn up and we don't have the capacity at the moment to visit everybody in their home. You can't pick this stuff up on the phone. It's going to be a very, very difficult winter.
File on 4 is a Radio Current Affairs production for BBC Sounds. It was presented by Ailis Hart, produced by Mick Tucker, and the editor was Gail Champion. Don't forget, you can find more radio, music, and podcasts on BBC Sounds.